In my first year as a Jesuit, a little more than 10 years ago, I had an experience that leaps back into my memory whenever we hear these readings. For first-year Jesuit novices, life pretty much revolves around prayer. I left the 9-to-5 of a government bureaucrat for an hour of meditation each morning, for the recitation of the Liturgy of the Hours, for daily Eucharist, for frequent retreats. And it amounted to a lot of time spent mining one's own spiritual depths, looking within. That was a privileged and very graced time, but it often felt like a rather solitary endeavor. And so naturally, I looked forward to the hour or so each week when we talked about whatever was going on in these many hours of prayer, or not going on, with our spiritual director, a more seasoned Jesuit. And one time, as I recounted what I thought were some pretty profound spiritual insights, if I do say so myself, another realization crashed in on me. My spiritual director was asleep. It was the first time that this had happened, or at least the first time that I had noticed it. And so I waited a few seconds, faked a cough that startled him back to consciousness, and we continued. But it was not the last time that I watched my director struggle mightily to stay awake, his eyelids drooping, his head bobbing. All of this was really good for my humility. But I confess that I was a bit annoyed by the whole thing. Really? You choose now to fall asleep? Every year, the gospel for the second Sunday of Lent is the story of the Transfiguration. And this year, we have Luke's version. And as I mentioned, this gospel, and especially the first reading from the book of Genesis, always bring me back to my drowsy spiritual director. Why? Because everybody seems to be falling asleep in these readings. Abram, having heard God's promise of descendants as numerous as the stars of the sky, falls into a dreamlike trance just before the covenant is to be sealed. As one translation puts it, as the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and a deep and terrifying darkness descended upon him. And in the gospel passage that I just read, Luke tells us that when they made it up the mountain, finally, Peter, James, and John were, quote, overcome by sleep. They awoke to find Jesus, as you do, conversing with Moses and Elijah. The Lord's clothing dazzling white, his face utterly transformed. Now, all this slumber may seem like an inconsequential detail, even a weird coincidence in the lectionary. I don't really think so. Biblically, sleep is never insignificant. Adam's slumber allows humankind to reach its perfection in the creation of Eve. Elijah himself sleeps, expecting death, but wakes instead to find God feeding him for his mission of prophecy. The two Josephs sleep and dream, one in Genesis, the other in the Gospels, and they awake with new understanding of God's plans and what they must do. I could go on, but you get the point. The only thing I would add here is that later in the Gospels, just a little later, Peter, James, and John will again fall asleep on yet another hillside, this time the Mount of Olives, during Jesus' agony in the garden. They will wake to the catastrophe of Good Friday, to the stunned uncertainty of Holy Saturday, and eventually to the impossible joy of resurrection. In other words, when someone nods off in the Bible, it is most often a pulsing sign in red neon that says, pay attention. Something big is about to happen. And something big does indeed happen in these readings for us today. Those that wake up behold nothing less than the glory of God. Abram wakes up to see a smoking pot of fire and a flaming torch, symbols of God ratifying the covenant. And And that covenant will not just change Abram's name to Abraham. It will transform the lives of generations down to our own. That event was in some senses the origin, sadly, of our brothers and sisters who were murdered in Christchurch this week, sons and daughters of Abraham. Peter, James, and John, awake as well, to behold the transfigured body of Christ. And that is the very body that St. Paul promises us in the second reading. And so what about us? We gather this night in the thick of our Lenten journey. And at its core, this season is not about giving up chocolate or drinking, not even about taking on this or that charitable practice. All of that is great. But if it's not in the service of something deeper, then we will have missed the point. Lent is fundamentally a time about waking up, an opportunity to rouse ourselves, which is never easy, always with God's grace, from spiritual complacency and, yes, even slumber, to awaken to the glory of God that plays in 10,000 places. Glory that is before our eyes as often as we care to look, in moments that are ordinary of grace and beauty. And these exist even in a world marked by discord, violence, and sin. They are equally real. The least we can do is notice them. I mentioned being somewhat irritated at having to arouse my spiritual director all those years ago. And I've softened in that judgment over time, thanks in part to this sleepy scene of the Transfiguration or the slumped disciples in the Garden of Gethsemane. Because it seems to me, at least, that the Christian life is not about whether we fall asleep or when or even how many times. It's about whether we wake up. Especially in this Lenten season, where we are asked to wake up to the intimate relationship God desires with each one of us in our prayer. Wake up to the hungers of the hearts and the bodies of those who in this world of plenty don't have enough. Wake up to those things that we grasp for security, things which are not God, yet so easily come to hold God's place. It's about whether we're willing